Welcome, everyone, to Cinema Cemetery, where bad films go to die. I am your host, DJ Spectre, coming to you undead only on Penguin Radio. Tonight's feature, which we will be resurrecting and dissecting, was created by the minds of Repo, the Genetic Opera. It features circus imagery, Aesop's fables, and Satan? But before we get into any of that, allow me to introduce tonight's guest, who I am summoning from the void. Gabby, welcome back.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going good. Thanks again for coming back. Again, you were kind of a last minute call up and just, hey.
No.
The unfortunate thing too is that it was the same person as last time. It's sad. I do want that person on at some point, but we'll have them on eventually.
Well,
so tonight we watched The Devil's Carnival, and you introduced me to this film. So how did you become acquainted with the movie in the first place?
It really has been a hot minute since I was first introduced to The Devil's Carnival. I wasn't really sure how I found it. I was just on Amazon Prime, TM, trademark. And I don't know, I was just trying to find something to watch. And then I saw The Devil's Carnival and I was just all like, huh, this looks really weird and sort of campy. Why not? So I just like sat through it like it was like midnight, probably like 3-4 in the morning. And I'm just watching it on my like little screen. And I was just like, oh my God. I'm going to have fever dreams about this for, like, the next week. Because it was that good to me. It's bad, but then, like, it's so bad, it's good, you know?
I think there's a lot that is good about it, but there's also some that's bad about it. And we'll definitely get into all that, because I feel I have very strong opinions. But first, I was going to say let's talk about the plot, but this really doesn't have a very traditional plot structure, because it's
it's more like just about cause and effect, more like it.
Yeah, it's about three people who go to HE Double Hockey Sticks, and they all are thrown into the Devil's Carnival, which is what hell is. Which, okay. I guess this kind of starts out with one of my big problems. It feels like there's a lot going on, because it starts out in the carnival, but each of them are sort of enact one of Aesop's fables, which represents one of their main sin in life. So there's John, who lost his son, Daniel. John is just looking for his son the whole time. And there's Tamara, who is in an abusive relationship. I have a lot of feelings about that.
Oh, Tamara.
Tamara. And her son was being in an abusive relationship. That's real cool. Well, it's supposed to be something.
You definitely deserve to go to hell for that.
Yeah. It's supposed to be something else, but it really gives off. We'll talk about that. That's one of my problems. But, and
we'll
it
go into it later.
Mary Wood, I think is her name, who is gluttonous, and her whole story is the dog with the pennies or the jewels in its mouth, and it sees its reflection, and it wants the other dog's jewels, and it drops all the jewels. And Tamara's story is a scorpion and the frog. I don't know what Daniel's story, or John's story, is supposed to be, but they enact those. And Oh, and well, the end of the movie, which is kind of the biggest, I guess the closest thing to kind of an objective or a goal on any character's part, the devil is going to go to war with heaven. And that's where it ends. And it's like, we did it. That's the movie.
Stay tuned for the sequel. Can't wait. The sequel actually has more story than the first one, which I guess kind of makes sense since where the first one left off, but that's its own thing entirely. It's almost its own different movie completely. But yeah, The Devil's Carnival. Wow.
That's it, baby. Yeah, I am excited to see the sequel. It did genuinely get me hyped up for that. I mean, yeah, it's really hard to talk about the plot just because I think it's meant to be kind of a cabaret of sorts where it's you have two songs per each story. I think except for John's story. I mean, he kind of has two songs. He has Kiss the Girls and then the one at the end.
Yeah. Once again, I will go on continuing to talk about my love for musical movies and not remembering a single song the whole way.
I mean, like, not all the songs are super memorable. I just found, in this rewatch, I think because I was looking for Alexa Vega, who played Shiloh in the first movie, in this movie, and I think that's why Kiss the Girls stood out to me, is because I was like, oh, there's Shiloh. She's just like a random circus person. Which, I mean...
Right.
Yeah.
She's just thrown into the mix.
Yeah, props to Alexa Vega for being so down to do what's essentially a glorified cameo. But, yeah, at the same time... Because when I first heard that she was in there, I thought, like, were all her scenes cut for some reason? Were they not able to film it? But no, she's in there. She's just one of the circus girls. And listening to it again, I was like, oh, yes, that's Alexa Vega's voice.
Okay. Yeah, because I watched Devil's Carnival first, so I didn't know anything about Alexa Vega at the time. I was just like, oh, this is so cool. And then when I watched Repo Man, and I think you mentioned it, and then I saw it too online, I was like looking through the movie being all like, where is she? And then when I listened to Kiss the Girls, I was just like, oh, that's where it just like clicked.
Yeah.
And I felt kind of dumb for it, but it was so small though, so I don't know if it was a big loss for me or not.
Yeah, no, don't feel bad about it. Because, yeah, you really have to kind of look for her. Because also she has more makeup on and she's a little bit older, I think, in this one. Also,
Yeah,
the guy who plays Luigi and the guy who plays Pavi is in this too. And, again, you kind of have to search for who they are. I'll be talking about the guy who plays Luigi's character a little bit later. But he's the magician who, like, he has a lot of lines, but he doesn't do anything. And then Ogre, who played Pavi, is Shadow in this, who's just a guy. He's one of the circus performers, too.
He's just a guy. Being a guy.
Just one of them wacky circus guys. Just, you know, doing lame carnival games. Yeah. There's really not much of the plot, guys. I'm sorry. Like, I know usually we're able to pull something out about even the thinnest of plots, but this has no plot. That's the problem. And I think the thing about Repo the Genetic Opera is it has so much plot. There's so much going on because you have the whole world that they have to build, and then they have these character relationships that they also have to build, and it's a lot of like intersecting, it's a lot of overlap, and it's a lot of people who know each other. But this is just three people who lived kind of bad lives died. Now they're doing Aesop's Fables in a carnival run by the devil. That's it. What else do you want? Thank you.
Yay. You did it.
No place for Joseph Campbell here.
Bones.
No. Linda Seeger who?
You've broken it down to its bare bones.
Oh, boy.
Ah.
Yeah. And when we return, we'll be talking about the more interesting elements of the film when we come back on Cinema Cemetery.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio. Carbon emissions represent man's greatest controllable contribution to global warming. If you like to breathe crisp, healthful air, think about this. For every mile driven, 1 pound of carbon particulate matter is released into our atmosphere. Before you jump into your car, next time, ask yourself if you can make the trip on your bike instead. And keep it clean.
And we're back, and we're going to be talking about the things that really make up the movie. So let's start out with the worst elements. What did you think was the worst element, Gabby?
I mean, like you mentioned, there wasn't really a concrete... I feel like, just like Repo Man, this is where it kills it for these movies that I feel like are supposed to be from, like, this conjoined, like, universe, maybe, somehow. I just get that vibe. But I feel like there was, like, really concrete ideas mm-hmm. going into these. Like, they had a lot of, like, thoughts and feelings about how this whole story wanted to play out. But they could never get it, like, in a straight line. Because when I was watching this again, I just felt like there was, like, no act one, no act two, no act three. It's just, like, boom, this happens to one person. We get a song, this happens. And then, like, by the end, like, nothing's really resolved. And they just, like, pull you forward into going to the sequel to see, like, oh, there might be some stories. We can't promise anything. But, you know, what about a plot line, you know? So, yeah, I felt like that's where it was the weakest. I like the performances and everything. And the songs were, like, the thing that drew me in. But besides that, I could not, for the life of me, tell you what exactly is going on, like, at all.
Yeah, you can't really boil this down to any one narrative, because there are, I guess, kind of three going on, and there's only really one character arc, but, yeah, this ain't no hero's journey, which, yeah, I think can work in some movies, but I think this movie could have benefited from maybe a bit more structure, or, like you said, like a really clear vision. For my worst element, I said almost everything with the dog story is pretty bad. What it is it's the story about the dog with the jewels in its mouth, as I said before, and how they translate that to the movie is they just have this person who can become a clone of somebody else holding an egg, and you have to try to get all the coins into the egg, and it's filmed about as interestingly as I described it. And while Mary Wood is trying to throw these coins into the egg, somebody comes out of the darkness and starts taking her clothes off, and she's all, "I'll sue! I'll get your hands off me!" And it's about at that level.
Oh my god. I wish there was some explanation for this, but it's just like, there's nothing to say about it.
Yeah, it doesn't really even have anything even to do with the story, I feel like, really.
Or, like, a connection to, like, her character at all. Like, because the whole point is she's trying to find, like, this humongous diamond in the carnival somewhere, because, like, she's all, like, grabby hands over here. And then, like, for some reason she takes this detour, and you're just like, mm-hmm. What's going on? Why was this necessary? What's going on?
Well, the thing that sucks is I had heard the song first, and in my mind I had kind of imagined how the scene would go. I imagined, yes, that'd be a carnival game, but I imagined maybe that there would be all these spinning mirrors and that you would be given sort of a toy gun, because they say three clicks in the chamber and have gun sound effects. So I was like, okay. And then there would be one mirror that kind of represents her and what she wants. And it's like, if she isn't able to shoot that three times, then her soul becomes whatever. Her soul becomes shadows, or the soul becomes, is lost in the carnival forever. Whatever their doom is. Yeah, for her, with her, for some reason, so it kind of shows what happens to each person, but with her specifically, she ends up being whipped naked on a stage. Like, some people just die, but no, she specifically is whipped naked on stage, which I just...
Very BDSM style.
I was gonna say, I'm not entirely complaining. I mean... As Daria said, it was... It wasn't the worst.
You can say it. You're allowed.
It was kind of hot. But at the same time, it's very confusing why that happens to just her. And also, I don't know. With these movies specifically, you can tell it's very much from a man's gaze.
Oh my god! We shouldn't even go there. But I know what you mean.
Don't even get me started.
I could go off these movies, male gaze.
Like with the song, we started this opera, Shrimp. We know the real word, but we're not gonna say it. there's just this part where there's a bunch of moaning women, and it's very much like, I wonder who composed this song. If it was a male or female, I wonder. Mm. And, you know, I get that even women are attracted to women, but women tend to give each other more decency. Anyway, sorry. That was my rant about...
Valid.
Worst performance, in your opinion, Gabby?
I'm not gonna lie. Probably John, I would say, was the least interesting person in the whole entire show. Like... They make him, I feel like he's supposed to be like the main guy that we're trying to follow the whole way through. Like, and I'm like, okay, I should feel sympathy for him. I should feel something for him. But I don't. Because there's nothing to him. There's like no, there's no meat. There's no flavor. There's nothing to him. He's just worried about his son and things like that, which should make me feel sympathy for it. But it really doesn't, because they're so... There's, like, nothing to it. Compared to, like, Tamar and even Mary Wood's story, like, at least there's something interesting. I mean, we had the whole whipping scene in Mary's story, which was, like, entertaining for a time. And then Tamara's was honestly the most interesting to me. I'm going to go on that later. But with John, I didn't feel connected to him, like, at all. Even though I felt like he was the guy we were supposed to be rooting for. It just didn't click with me.
Yeah, I think they do give a lot more time to Mary Wood and Tamara, especially. They give them more things to do. But yeah, John's just stumbling. John came off to me like confused William Shatner the whole time. Do you know who William Shatner is?
I feel like I know what you mean.
Captain Kirk. It just...
I do.
Felt like one of those episodes of Star Trek where Captain Kirk was just confused the whole time. And... Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. For my worst performance, I did put Mary Wood. Watching it again, it wasn't as bad as I remembered, but like that beginning scene where she, I feel like they kind of directed her to bark. And I can't fault her on that. But yeah, she's like, there's an opening scene where it's showing her robbing a bank, or like getting back to her trailer after robbing a bank, and she's yipping. And, you know, to a certain extent, I'm like, okay, there's only so much you can do with that. But to another extent... and, you know, for the most part,
I completely forgot about the yipping now that you mentioned it, but I'm like... That's gonna live rent-free in my brain now, just remembering that scene.
Yeah. And, you know, she does do a pretty good job for the most part. But then again, yeah, at that scene where that guy is stealing her clothes and she's just like, how dare you? It's like, I would have a very different reaction. But okay. The men creating this movie were just like, this is how women act.
Oh, God.
I also said steampunk Ben Franklin's singing was pretty bad. We didn't need to hear him sing.
Oh, my God.
And when we return to Cinema Cemetery, we'll be talking about some of the most outrageous scenes and some of the things that we really liked about the movie. Coming up when we come back. And we're back. So, Gabby, in your opinion, if you were to choose one, what in your opinion is the most outrageous scene?
Okay, so this might be a little bit of a spoiler. It's basically, so after the end credits, there's...
We're spoiling the whole thing.
You're right. So basically, in the, I guess, mid-credit scene at the end, there's this song that they do called In My Dreams I Drown. And it's basically like a little stage production of Tamara at the end. She's still in hell. She's still in... I almost said the bad word.
I don't know if we can say it. I just don't for safety. I mean, we're talking about the location, so I think that should be fine.
So, Tamara's there, and she's still stuck in hell, and she's singing this song. The ship is swayed, heave-ho, heave-ho, on the dark and stormy blue. And I'm just going crazy, because she looks so pretty, and she's in this dress, and then, like, Satan's there with her, and they're singing this like duet together, and it's kind of, it feels very like piratey sea shanty kind, and it's just such a good scene. But then like it also makes sense too, because like I might go into this later talking about Tamara, but I really just was thinking about that theme, that scene, and it's just like, this is so fitting, and it's scary because like Tamara makes a lot of bad decisions. She doesn't deserve to go to the bad place for it, but it was fitting because it basically, it's saying like Tamara just spends the rest of eternity as wife or like a Sleeping Beauty type situation. That's how it got conveyed to me, but I was just like the whole time thinking, well, like, well, Tamara just won't get a break, and that's like the saddest part about all of it. I thought
that was my thing too, was how at the end it revealed, I don't know if it's supposed to be a canonical thing or if it was just a song that Terrence Zadunich
wrote
and wanted to get in there somehow.
You've been practicing
how to pronounce his name. Yeah, I watched a video and somebody else pronounced it, so I was like, all right, I got
it. I need this link. I have to know his name. I know how
to... Zadunich.
This app alphabet soup name. Oh,
I'm losing it. But anyway, I was just like, so she went from a bad boy to the worst boy. Got it. Cool. Good for her, I guess. She's like, who's the worst person I can date?
Corruption arc.
Let's just date Satan. Why not? Let's go crazy.
Let's go crazy. Let's go stupid.
Go nuts. I guess my pick for most outrageous scene would probably be just anything underneath the big top. Kiss the Girl is probably one of my picks because it's just a bunch of circus girls going up to John singing this song. That's kind of bad, but I think it's supposed to be kind of bad. And then afterward, he goes up to a kissing booth where one of the characters' painted doll is there, and she bites off his ear, but it's not bitten off anymore.
What?
And I was like, what's the point of this? I think it's supposed to set up his infidelity, but then also it's like, what's the point of her biting off his ear? Why are we here? I don't care about you, John. I don't care that you cheat on your wife, John.
What does this have to do with anything, John?
Yeah, John. John. Get out of the movie, John. I want to look at the scorpion some more. And the magician. I kind of love the magician. Favorite quote. I got a lot, I gotta say.
I have one in particular. I'm probably gonna say it wrong, but it's something Tamara said. And it's never gonna leave my brain either. Oh my god, it's right next to the whipping scene. She's like with, gosh, how did I, she's with the scorpion. And then like, I don't remember what he did. I think he threw a knife or something. And then she was just like, that is so fire. I don't know. And it was just like, what she year said, was this movie made?
I wrote this too. She says, that's so boss.
Oh my god, it's worse than I remember. I hate that so much.
It feels just like a 40-year-old man being like, what do kids say, boss?
I'm like thinking canonically, she's probably like in her 20s, isn't she? Or like, she's probably like getting out of her teens since, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then she's also dressed in this like super 60-ish like satin dress, I think, and it like doesn't fit at all, and she has like her hair tied up, and she looks like, I don't know, she looks like a cartoon character, and then just saying that line made it even worse, and I'm just like, oh no.
Yeah, she's all done up in like the 50s sock hop. Yeah, okay, so I'm gonna go through the worst lines to the best ones. So I have "that was so boss" as the absolute worst one.
As it should be.
So this is a line said by John after he says that his son should have never been born. He's just like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that, buddy. Oh, I'm so sorry, buddy. And I'm like, okay. I get that you're stressed, but buddy? Going straight to buddy. Just, oh, I'm so sorry, buddy. Ugh, pal. Ugh.
That's such a deep love thing to say.
I'm so sorry, dude. I could see John being one of those like D-word parents. I see the person who I know that John is in my head, and I hate him. My next favorite lines, these two are said by the magician. Who's a guy got a mystify around here? That was great. And another line the magician says was, we was robbed, Mr. Bunny. Because this was when steampunk Ben Aww. Franklin was choosing who's going to be performing tonight. And that just made me happy. That's the guy who played Luigi from Repo, the Genetic Opera. And I was like, yeah, that tracks. He's putting 110% effort into this. And
for genuinely in this movie compared to Repo.
I know, I love him. Aww. He's just like genuinely a very fun guy in this one. He's not a rapey person.
Thank God. But,
yeah.
We've upgraded.
A stabber. Yeah. So for the quotes that I said were genuinely good, you're drowning in the grief of Jupiter's water. What does that mean? I don't know what it means, but it's so beautiful too. It's so good. That's in the song twice.
That sounds so Lovecrafty, and it works.
I know. It's so, it's very poetic, and I loved
it. Cosmic horror-y, like very sci-fi and pretty. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's so flowery.
And then drown in your beautiful grief, which is just a mood. And so these are all said by the devil. My last one is, I'm not in the business of murdering innocent children. That's God's jurisdiction. And I was just like, oof. Get it, Satan.
Go off,
Satan.
King. Not my king, but, you know, king.
Somebody's. A lot of people's, actually. I just thought that those lines were so cool, and I could just... I just see, like, a little high school art student with their little beret, with their clove cigarettes, being like, that's so deep. I get it. But those lines I thought were genuinely good. I thought those were... Well crafted. Well said. Good on you, Terrence Stidunch. And when we return, we'll be talking about our favorite parts of the movie. Coming up on Cinema Cemetery.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Hello, it is me, a very attractive person. You can trust me. Are you tired of people constantly trying to kiss you on the lips? What I do to relieve this problem is wear a mask. Wearing a mask keeps all those grody lips away from my perfect smoocher. It also keeps germs from away from other people. But it's mostly just so people stop trying to kiss me. If you're tired of people constantly trying to kiss you on the lips, then wear a mask.
This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. And welcome back. So let's talk about some of the genuinely good things that we loved about this movie. What was the best bad performance in your opinion, Gabby?
The best bad performance was probably by steampunk Benjamin Franklin. Just because, I don't know, I grew attached to him. Like, he didn't have, like, this big arc, but he was, like, this little side... He was a sidekick to Satan. But he had, like, he was the only serious one. And you kind of, like, felt bad for him because he's trying to make everyone listen and trying to make Satan be like, hey, dude, what are we going to do? The whole carnival's in shambles. What do you want to do? And Satan's just all like, I just want to do my makeup. And I'm just like, I sympathize for him more than John. And if that's saying something about the way you're writing your characters compared to your main characters to your secondary characters, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. I just loved him, and I loved his performance. I loved how he played him. He was just good. All right, dude. 10 out of 10.
For best bad performance, I would say the magician. Just because, once again, I forget his name, but the guy who played Luigi in Repo, giving it his all. He's doing, like, this, like very cartoony, like, hey, what's a guy gotta do type of voice. It just made me very happy. And gotta throw one out to Wick, who was Alexa Vega's character, who is kind of the main circus girl. Once again, I didn't think her singing was that great, but I don't think it was supposed to be with the type of song that she was singing. Best good performance.
Okay. Can we just get a shout out to freaking Terrence for his performance as Satan? Because that was like, come on, like, the whole, like, full body, like, transformation, like, the freaking makeup on him was just astounding. I literally did not recognize him from Repo Man to the Devil's Carnival. Like, if you asked me who Terrence played in those movies, I would not be able to tell you. And I didn't know. He's not in it as much as I would have liked him to be, like, as a center of attention. Of course he's going to be the center of attention. It's his carnival, basically. It's named after him. But he doesn't have a very, like, overlooming presence in it physically in the movie. He's, like, there. He's kind of, like, messing around, doing his own thing. And you kind of don't get the idea, like, he has anything big planned out until, like, right around the end of the movie. And then you're kind of like, whoa. Satan has some stuff in the works. And I am thrilled to find out how that's gonna turn out for God and for heaven. And it's just so good. I loved him so much.
Yeah.
And all his songs.
Yes. The last... like, today, I've had the last song stuck in my head, Grace for Sale.
I raise my hell, my cane, my snakes, tongues, slither in the mud. That's how a carnival grows, my son. Tongues, slither in the mud.
Grace for Sale, yes.
Yeah. And then...
That was, like, my gateway song. When I heard him sing that song, that was basically what drew me into the Devil's Carnival, and I'm thankful for it every day.
Yeah, I got the devil on here. I also put Painted Doll because she deserves so much. She is wonderful. Painted Doll is sort of the scorpion who is like a knife thrower's. She's his assistant, And she has this whole song, she has the song Prick Goes the Scorpion's Tail.
Prick, prick, prick goes the scorpion's tail.
And I realized today that she's actually a pretty well-known singer.
Amelia Otto?
I think that's it, yeah. I was listening to some of her singing today, and yeah, she's fantastic. She's a wonderful singer, and she has a great resonance in her voice. She really was a very standout performance. I also got to throw one up to the Scorpion, because he...
Yes!
Yeah. He did a great job. The actor, I think, did a really good job of embodying a kind of a sexiness, but also being able to be goofy and kind of cartoony at the same time. And that's tricky to do. Gotta give him props for that, because that can't be easy. And I guess that was his first time singing in a production.
Darling dear, I'm so sincere, there's no need to tear, trust me.
And he does a great job, so... throwing out to
him. He really does.
Mm-hmm. And both of them come back in the sequel. Best aspect, in your humble opinion?
Honestly, I'm gonna say the music was the best possible thing that could have come from this whole film. The film itself isn't very strong, I feel like, in a lot of ways. I feel like it could do better. But just mm-hmm. the music itself always draws you in. Like I said, Grace for Sale is a thing that made me actively go out and look for the Devil's Carnival, because I just had to have more, and I just kept consuming all the songs and thinking of the stories and thinking of like how cool it would be, because the songs basically help tell the story for them better than the actual movie does. And sometimes music is better at conveying a story than the visuals, so I really appreciated that aspect of how much work they put into like these songs and like making it an experience for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie's just kind of like an extra.
Yeah.
An extra treat.
Yeah. I definitely put in the songs, because a lot of them are really good. The costuming and makeup were a huge upgrade in this movie from Repo. Because
yeah,
this is something that I realized about Repo was... the fact that there were so many people in it was kind of a detriment, because it's supposed to be this world where all these rich people can afford all this genetic modification, and they're all supposed to be wearing crazy outlandish clothing, and they have a really big cast, and they didn't have a lot of money, so they weren't able to do crazy prosthetic makeup on everybody, and they weren't really able to get all these crazy costumes for everybody. So the world felt very half-finished. Like, there was somebody wearing, like, a bright pink tank top at one point. And I think the fact that this film has a much smaller cast meant that they could allow as much time for everybody's makeup and everybody's costume. They could put that money towards that. The costumes for the Devil's Carnival, I feel like they had to make or search out. But yeah, everybody in this world feels like they're supposed to be there, and it really helps the film. I'm gonna pitch this now. I think that this would work better as a stage production, because a lot of the songs are very repetitive. You get the song, and it's funny, because that's kind of one of my criticisms from Repo, the genetic opera, was that it felt very repetitive, and I think that kind of repetition could work in a stage setting, because you have the first song, which is the lesson. In the case of the Scorpion and the Toad, you have Trust Me, which is the song that the characters sing, and then you have a song that kind of a chorus member sings later, which is a Painted Doll's song, Prick Goes the Scorpion's Tail. And I think that would work really well on a stage setting, you know, have the first song kind of be more a part of the story, and then the second song, the performer can go into the audience and have sort of a more interaction with the audience, or have some kind of be able to perform the song in a different way with a different energy that I think could really benefit this. And lastly, would you recommend this film?
I totally agree with you.
Oh, well, I mean, thank you. You could tell me that I'm right all you want. I'm not going to complain about it.
But no, I definitely agree with you with that. Especially with songs like 666.
All 666 rules are police. All 666 rules you must heed.
Which is basically like setting up all the rules of like what you can and can't do in the Devil's Carnival. I would really like to see how they would visualize that out of the stage production. It just feels more fitting, like you say. I would definitely watch it if it was a stage production and probably enjoy it.
Yeah, and Tale for a Penny, I think that would be a great song to have somebody go into the audience.
Lord, Lord, that greed, it'll kill ya. Lord, Lord, go on past that, will ya? Your purse strings are tight. Bleed for a sinner. I just need a few pennies more.
And, like, holding a hat out in people's faces and being all like, I'm not gonna continue it.
That.
And you can play around with that kind of spontaneity, too. Would you recommend this film? And if so, to who?
Definitely not with my parents, because I live in a Catholic household. Definitely never my family. Yeah. I would definitely recommend it to maybe, like, close friends, like I did with all you guys, for, like, just something, like, I would definitely recommend it to people who are into the aesthetic of kind of, like, you know, the idea of carnivals and the idea of, like, the goofiness, and I enjoyed it. I would like to see what a middle school or high school schooler's interpretation of this would be, and it would be cool.
Yeah, some edgy middle schoolers or high schoolers would love this. The Hot Topic crowd would eat this up, honestly.
Yes! A collab with Hot Topic and the Devil's Carnival. Just making, bring it back. Let's have
if
this
they
back
had
in stores.
Those...
Let's make it merchandise.
If they had those fashions, if they had the frog dress at Hot Topic, it would be mine. And with that, we will put Devil's Carnival to rest again. Thank you again for being on, Gabby. I'm sorry that it always has to be last minute, but I very much appreciate you.
I love being your last minute little rendezvous. I enjoyed this. This was fun.
Thank you. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that you're having fun, too. Intro and outro themes were created by Ditto Master, and you can find more of his work on YouTube and Spotify. We also have an Instagram, cinema.cemetery, so check it out. We got two posts up. Woohoo!
Woo!
And if you ever again wish to return to this holy ground, you can find us at Penguin Radio. Goodbye!
Woo! Woo!